It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Sigrid Johannes. She's with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Hey, it's great to see you.
Good to see you, Tony.
Okay, so Sigrid is tied into the natural resources side of NCBA and the Public Lands Council as associate director. When we talk about your role, what's the elevator speech there?
Well, for NCBA and for the Public Lands Council, I focus on issues that affect federal grazing permittees. So that's anybody, primarily in the West, who are grazing on Forest Service and BLM land. And it's a very unique part of our industry because they have a whole different set of hoops that they have to jump through on a daily basis. You know, the line that we hear often from a lot of our producers is, what can we do to keep federal regulations and sort of federal overreach out of our business? To some extent, that's not an option for permittees. The federal government's already in their business. It's already a part of their day-to-day existence. So we do what we can to streamline that process, make it as efficient as possible, and really maximize the benefits that ranchers and grazing is bringing to our public lands.
So I just wonder, there are certain areas of agriculture that every 2 or every 4 years, they have to relearn everything.
Yeah.
Is this one example of where, when there's a change in Congress or a change in administration, you have to almost relearn everything?
I think that's a great point, Tony, and I think we certainly see that. And honestly, it's on both sides of the aisle. I think sometimes there's a little bit of a misconception about where some of those, you know, new folks or unfamiliar folks might be coming from. It's Republicans and Democrats. We get folks who are not familiar with agricultural issues, but we also get people who are unfamiliar with the particular landscape and the particular challenges in the West. And that's where I really focus for NCBA and PLC. So we do a lot of education every Congress on, you know, what it looks like operating in a drought, what it looks like operating with the constant threat of wildfire, you know, what it looks like to run cattle, or in PLC's case, even sheep, on these very vast allotments that have, you know, a very different forage profile than your folks who are grazing on a lot of green grass east of the Mississippi. So that's something that we've already begun with this next Congress. We've already started reaching out and having those conversations, but we're going to continue our outreach across the board to really keep our friends close and keep everyone else even closer.
So I'm also kind of curious here, because you're dealing with multiple audiences, mm-hmm. if you will. You've obviously got the administration, you've got the legislative branch there, but you also have consumers as well who might hear something and it sounds good and it sounds like it's cute, but it's really a predator situation. Are you dealing with some of that?
Certainly. You know, those big charismatic predators, as we call them, things that you can see and you can buy a stuffed animal for them, you know, people have a very emotional connection to those species, even when they don't fully understand the impact that they have on the land. So a perfect example of that we're dealing with right now is actually the Northern Cascades grizzly bear announcement that we saw recently from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They're thinking about, you know, reopening the process to reintroduce that predator in that area. That's, you know, sounds great on paper to a lot of folks who don't live out there. It's a different matter entirely when you're someone who sees the predatory, you know, toll that takes on your operation every day. Gray wolves is another great example. We've had an awful fall season for a lot of producers in Colorado and other parts of the West, experiencing very high rates of depredation due to gray wolves. And, you know, these are species that again, have that emotional tie to the American public. And certainly there's, you know, a lot of interest in the ranching community in figuring out how they can be responsibly managed. But just willy-nilly airdropping these species into areas where they either didn't exist to begin with, or the work hasn't been done on the ground to really figure out with ranchers and with rural families, what is this going to look like? How can we compensate people? How can we keep livestock safe? How can we keep families safe? That sort of top-down approach does not work with these large, aggressive, and frankly dangerous animals. I think the cuddly image around bears and wolves, you know, really belies the real nature of what they're doing out there, and they can be a threat to livestock and to people.
You mentioned safe.
Yeah.
There is an act, I think I've got this right, the SAFE Act. What's that?
Yes. Yeah, that's a great question. So the SAFE Act is a piece of legislation that we've been working on for a few months here at NCBA, working to defeat, frankly. It's the Save America's Forgotten Equines Act of 2022, and it's a little bit of a misnomer. It's aimed at codifying an appropriations rider, a part of the omnibus packages that have been passed year after year over the past couple of years, that is aimed at stopping the transport of horses, domestic horses, to Canada or Mexico with the assumption that they will end up in a slaughter situation, in a processing situation. And the reason we have a couple objections to this is because, number one, the United States Congress doesn't have jurisdiction over what happens in Canada and Mexico. We think trying to legislate across our borders and into somebody else's backyard usually comes with unintended consequences and doesn't work out for us too well. The second thing is that we need a way to dispose of, you know, horses who have either reached the end of their life or are in a situation where owners can no longer care for them. We have a lot of folks, especially in the West, who are dealing with extremely high hay prices, extremely severe drought conditions, and they simply can't care for these animals anymore. When that happens, they've got a limited set of options about what their next move is going to be. We don't want them abandoning those animals out on federal lands. That only exacerbates a whole other set of issues. And a lot of people can't either access or afford the veterinary euthanasia route and all of the different remains disposal questions that come along with that. Not every county has a landfill that will take horse remains. Not every county has access, you know, to other, you know, incinerators and other sorts of services for disposing of those remains. So the processing supply chain that exists in Canada and Mexico, you know, again, it's something that provokes a really strong emotional response from a lot of people, but frankly, it's a very humane, efficient, and accessible means of dealing with a problem that a lot of folks in rural America have. And we don't want that option taken off the table, especially when doing so is only going to exacerbate the suffering of horses who are, you know, at the end of their life and they just get abandoned somewhere or they end up in a case of abuse or neglect.
You said unintended consequences. And really, you're identifying some of the challenges we have with wild horses. Mm-hmm. What else are you watching there?
That's a great question, Tony. So I mentioned in the SAFE Act, you know, one of the things we don't want to have happen is to have some of those domestic horses, those privately owned animals, turned out on federal lands. When we get into that kind of situation, we really blur the lines between what is a wild horse with a little W and what is a wild horse with a big W. Wild horses are protected under federal statute. We have a lot of horses out there. They're not truly wild. They're animals who have been abandoned and who are, you know, gentled and have had a lot of human interaction. And that's a completely different scenario than some of these other, you know, truly free roaming horses and burros that we have out on federal lands. But no matter how you slice it, we have a severe overpopulation crisis on these herd management areas, on these HMAs. And that's not news to anybody in the West. You know, they're out there every day seeing the extremely overgrazed ground, the damage that you get to riparian areas. You know, they're seeing the wildlife who are suffering from competing with horses in these areas that are very strapped for resources. And then, of course, it does also come back to livestock because they're out grazing on, you know, allotments that are lawfully grazed by permittees, and the forage in some cases is just not there because you've got so many horses overpopulating the area. So there's another bill in Congress that we're keeping a pretty close eye on. It's been introduced by the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, Congressman Grijalva, and it's the Wild and Free Roaming Horse Protection Act of 2022. It's got a lot of concerning ideas in there, quite frankly. One of the key ones that we're really keeping an eye on and trying to fight back against right now is the abolition of the adoption incentive program. And this is a program that BLM runs with a cash incentive attached to try and get more folks to adopt some of these horses out of off-range holding, out of these corrals. I think everybody can agree, everybody who has familiarity with this issue can agree, we don't want horses sitting in corrals for the rest of their lives. It's very expensive to taxpayers. It's not ideal for the animals. We want to get these horses adopted out. We want to get them off to new homes. Many of those are in the East where there's more grass, there's more water. And so we really want to see that program continue, and this bill would get rid of it. So that's one of many reasons why we're opposed.
So if we want to keep up with what's going on through the Public Lands Council or NCBA's Natural Resources Department, how do we do that?
You can always visit publiclandscouncil.org. We post a lot of updates there about our work. And before I let you go, Tony, or before you let me go, rather, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask everybody out there, if you have an interest in any of these issues, if you have any concern about animal welfare, about how our natural resources are managed, go ahead and give somebody a call on the House Energy and Commerce Committee. That's where this SAFE Act fight is being fought, and we really, really want to make sure that we see that bill defeated before before Congress gets out before the end of the year here. So go ahead and look up any member on the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Give their office a call. They'll pick up. They'll take your name down, take a quick message, and just make sure you make the your opinion known there that we do not want to see that bill pass.
Sigrid, so great to see you.
Good
Keep
to see
up
you,
the
Tony.
Good work.
Thank you.
Sigrid Johannes with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Associate Director of the Public Lands Council and NCBA's Natural Resources. From Washington, D.C., I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.